Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. The second Republican Great Depression seems to be at the top of everybody's mind. There's an enormous amount going on. Barack Obama is going to be coming forward soon talking about the stimulus package. The Republicans are pushing back like crazy, including a couple of economists, Harold Cole and Lee Ohanian, I believe it's pronounced, writing in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. The new meme, the new story, the new reinvention here of these guys is that, in fact, you know, the FDR didn't get us out of the Great Depression. He made it worse. And now Obama's going to do the same thing. What we need to do is go back to those brilliant Republican policies, like as were pursued by Harding and Coolidge and Hoover in the 20s, and as were pursued by Reagan and Bush in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s that did so well for our economy. So I just wanted to do a reality check with an actual economist, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., where he directs the program on inequality and the common good, co-founder of Business for Shared Prosperity, a program of Demos, the co-author of Wealth and Our Commonwealth, Why America Should Tax Accumulated Fortune, one of my BuzzFlash books of the month many, many years ago, about two, 3 years ago, I believe, and Robin Hood Was Right, the website IPS.org, Chuck Collins. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Chuck. Good to talk with you as always. Yeah. I'm assuming you read this piece by Cole and Ohanian.
Yes. It was. You describe it. It's a kind of interesting revision of history. It really is the Herbert Hoover perspective. It's let's just focus on balanced budgets and charity and tax cuts for the business class, and that will get us out of the depression. It's a little bit of a straw man, though. No one is talking about anything on the scale of the New Deal in terms of the National Industrial Recovery Act and massive antitrust legislation. If anything, the proposals right now are a bit on the timid side. But remember that it was Herbert. The Depression was going on for 3 years before FDR came on the scene with the New Deal agenda. And a lot of people would argue that if we had intervened, if the U.S. government had intervened sooner after 1929, it wouldn't have been quite the Great Depression that it was. So that's another way to look back on the story of what happened.
Say that again?
Well, if, you know...
Oh, during Herbert Hoover's presidency.
Right, exactly. Okay. If 3 years lapsed.
That's right.
Know,
yeah, people don't... You know, the election was in 32, but at that time, the president didn't take office until March of 33. And it took Roosevelt, you know, almost a half a year, really, to get anything solid moving along, if my recollection is correct.
No, that's true. I mean, immediately after his election was the bank holiday.
Yeah.
But think about that. So Hoover, you know, 3 years of no intervention. I mean, one of the biographies I read of Hoover said he continued to focus on the need for charity responses to the Depression, concern about the balanced budget, not wanting to spend money in the economy to stimulate it. It was the anti-Keynesian view. And a lot of people say if they'd intervened much sooner to deal with the asset bubbles, just like in the 1920s, there was a buildup in a housing bubble then. If they'd intervened to deal with the financial institutions sooner, things wouldn't have unraveled.
Mm-hmm.
But they had 3 years to unravel. So that's another, you know, that's part of the...
So how far have things unraveled right now, Chuck Collins, in comparison to the last Republican Great Depression? And because my sense of it is that there there is a lot more that has unraveled than is apparent. You know, when you've got the Bank of International Settlements saying that there's a quadrillion, $1,000 trillion worth of derivatives out there in the marketplace, asset categories, and I put asset in quotes, asset categories that literally did not exist 15 years ago, and that, you know, shall we say, questionable value. It really seems to me like we're at the edge of something very, very much like 1933. And in fact, I've been saying on this program for a while that it wouldn't surprise me at all in the next 12 to 18 months to see another bank holiday. And in fact, I think maybe, you know, we should take a lesson from Gordon Brown and Northern Rock, and instead of giving these banks, in some cases, more money than they're actually worth to keep them alive, you know, let them fail, buy them out of bankruptcy, keep the employees, keep the institutions in place, protect the investors, not the stockholders, but the depositors, and you know, do what Sweden did. Bottom line, what do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, I think there are limits now to any historical comparison, because the amount of phantom wealth that was, you know, pumped up and so-called created over the last 10 years is just dizzying.
Yeah, it was a Bernie Madoff thing.
Yeah, it's just the casino economy grew to a scale, unprecedented scale. The amount of unreal wealth, or what I would call phantom wealth, that supposedly was driving the economy, these debt bubbles and the whole shadow financial sector that grew around that, that makes this a new ball game, really.
Yeah, I mean, there are literally trillions of dollars, trillions, thousands of billions of dollars in bets, derivatives, on things like the weather, or derivatives that are based on derivatives. There are bets that other bets won't go down. And the bets that they're betting won't go down are bets on bets that other bets won't go down, which are bets that credit that a particular mortgage won't go down. I mean, you know, in some cases, these things echo out 5-10 steps. And and at every step, it has been sold as if it was an asset with value, when in fact, you know, it has no value or marginal value. And now the underlying asset behind all of them, you know, the from which they are derived, thus the word derivatives, are tanking a little bit. But, you know, anyhow, I'm sorry, I'm ranting, and I wanted to hear your thoughts.
No, you know, I think somebody's probably betting right now on what you're going to say next. You know, I mean, I think the seltzer bottle of our economy has been just shaking for a decade. Yeah. We really don't know what's in the bottle. We don't know how much water is really there. But I think we can assume there's a lot of froth that it hasn't settled down. There's a whole credit card bubble still.
Yep.
There's the derivative bubble. So, you know, it's interesting to see this debate where you have the Republicans talking about the bad parts of the stimulus bill. And I mean, what do they propose?
Well, they want another bubble. You know,
we want to go back to some new bubble economics. And this what makes it a new ball game is we're not going back to cheap energy. We're not going back to empire. You know, it's not the 50s and 60s where we're going to, you know, be at the competed champion of the world in terms of the economy, and we don't want to go back to some kind of bubble economics. So going forward, we have to go back to the basics. How do you build a real economy based on real value again?
It seems that there are two things. One is the fairly obvious one of, you know, regulation, playing the game by the rules. If you try to play football without, you know, goalposts and referees, you don't have a game. You've got a mess. And trying to have banks that don't have banking regulation and that are allowed to get into the gambling business, the so-called investment business, things like that, you know, you end up with the mess. And this is what happened. This is literally what happened in the 20s, and it's literally what happened in the last, you know, 25 years. But there's also a second piece to this that is less visible to people. And that is, and Larry Beinhart has done some really great research on this. And what he found is that whenever the income tax rate on people of very high income, not necessarily wealth, but income, was people whose income was over about $3 million a year, whenever that tax rate went above 50%, that the economy was slow and steady and grew and was solid. And that whenever that went below 50%, as happened in 1921 when Harding came in and he dropped the tax rate from 80% down to 25%, and in a couple of steps. And as happened when Reagan came in 81, and in late 81 he dropped the tax rate, in 82 we had, you know, a crash, that what happens, what follows that dropping of the tax rate on the very wealthy is a bubble economy, always. And it seems to me that if that's the case, and there's a certain logic to that, that the wealthy people would then keep money in businesses and things like that rather than simply run out looking for how do I make money with money, then the best solution to this thing might be to roll back the Reagan tax cuts. What do you think?
Well, I'm with you. I think that part of shutting down the casino, which is what you're saying, let's, you know, the re-regulation of the banking sector, but the other part is to tax the speculative binge, you know, tax the speculative...
To stop passing out the free chips. Yeah, excellent. Chuck Collins, thanks so much for dropping by. IPS.org, the best website for people to find your writings, Chuck?
Actually, find extremeinequality.org.
Great. Extremeinequality.org. Chuck, thanks so much for dropping by. Good talking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ. Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hey, Valentine's Day is next week, but you don't need to stand in line for overpriced flowers. Instead, ProFlowers has an exclusive deal just for my listeners, but only when you click on the microphone and type in Hartman at ProFlowers.com. Get one dozen sweet expressions roses for only $39.99 and get a second dozen free, plus a free glass vase. That's 24 beautiful romantic roses for $39.99. That's an insane deal this close to Valentine's Day. But don't wait, because supplies are limited, and this offer expires Friday. Schedule your order now for guaranteed Valentine's Day delivery. ProFlowers roses are rated best value by the Wall Street Journal, and they're guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days. So visit ProFlowers.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and type in my password, Hartman, or call 1-800-PRO-FLOWERS, that's 1-800-PRO-FLOWERS, and mention Hartman. Using my password always gets you a free glass vase and special deals. So go to the microphone on ProFlowers.com and enter my password, Hartman. That's with two N's. This offer expires Friday and prices will go up. So order to...
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Let's get to Joe the plumber. He's covering the war in Israel.
6 to 9.
You're not going to believe what he said.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed war. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time.
Yeah, you know, we should just take what the Pentagon says. No atrocities. You know, that's just war.
It's Carl Wolfson.
I think he's one of those people that had his 5 minutes of fame and now thinks he's really smart.
I kind of lean that he's an idiot.
Morning, 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Join the country's top scholars and authors for Oregon's most prestigious lecture series, the Oregon Historical Society's Mark O. Hatfield Distinguished Historians Forum. The 2009 Sesquicentennial Series begins February 18th with Doris Kearns Goodwin lecturing on Abraham Lincoln. Ms. Goodwin is a world-renowned historian, commentator, and author of several New York Times bestsellers, including Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. Learn more about Doris Kearns Goodwin and the rest of the speakers at OHS.org. Get your tickets today.
Hey, thought you were making breakfast.
I am, with McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
How is that making breakfast?
I'm mixing and matching, you know, putting breakfast together.
We're on a budget.
They're a dollar each. You know, I can't bake warm biscuits or sizzle sausage for that.
True.
I can't put real fruit in yogurt or make crispy hash browns for a buck.
You're so right.
Make your own morning and choose from 6 wallet-friendly favorites on McDonald's Breakfast Dollar Menu.
This was a brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, I do have my moments.
Breakfast served during breakfast hours only.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Dear Mom and Dad, well, the Army has finally seen fit to give me some time off, so I'm writing to tell you that I'm doing fine over here. And Mom, since you asked, if anyone wants to help, just tell them to contact the USO. You can't believe how much they do for us. With love, your son Michael.
The USO depends on the generosity of the American people. To find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. the USO, until everyone comes home.
These days, your budget's really feeling the heat. But Family Fun doesn't have to cost much at all when you make it by the pitcherful with Kool-Aid. For the price of one bottle of soda, you can mix up five big pitchers of Kool-Aid. And for pennies a glass, keep the whole family refreshed and smiling. At that price, maybe the whole neighborhood. Kool-Aid instead of soda. As always, delivering more smiles per gallon.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Americans overwhelmingly want Congress to pass an economic stimulus bill. At the same time, 34 GOP senators are coming out against this thing. President Barack Obama going on a sales pitch for it. Lamar Alexander, Tennessee, we should not spend this kind of money on many of these programs. We should not borrow this money when each family already owes over $500,000. Yeah, right. See, this is a variation on the old David Stockman, let's starve the beast thing. Run the government into debt, into $10 trillion worth of debt, and then when the Democrats come along and say, you know, we're going to try and do something to fix the mess that the Republicans made, they say, you can't do that. We're too far in debt. This is the two Santa Clauses theory on steroids that I shared with you a week and 2 weeks ago. Jude Winiski's theory that Grover Norquist picked up and ran with, Arthur Laffer. This was the basis of Reaganomics, the basis of Thatcheronomics, the basis of the whole right wing. It's nuts. Bob Bennett, the Republican from Utah, I'm going to vote against this package because it's not going to work. Right. Chris Bond, the Republican from Missouri. Unfortunately, his Democratic bill falls short of these goals and does not do more to grow and does much more to grow the debt and grow government than grow the economy. I mean, you've got Michael Steele yesterday saying government doesn't create jobs. Well, gee, Michael Steele, you've been working for the government all these years. You mean you weren't getting paid, for example. So anyhow, the new USA Today Gallup poll finds, quote, Americans overwhelmingly want Congress to pass an economic stimulus bill. Two-thirds say the package will boost the economy. But regarding personal finances, half say it either would have no effect or would make things worse. Interesting. Nevertheless, only 17% say Congress should reject the bill altogether. So people are confused about this. Maybe that's because the ratio of Republicans to Democrats on the talking head shows has been 2-1 in favor of the Republicans. Who knows? But the fact of the matter is, and you got these people in the Wall Street Journal saying, "Oh no, the Great Depression was actually prolonged by Franklin Roosevelt. The New Deal made things worse." As I recall, it got really bad under Herbert Hoover. Although, see, that's the part of the problem is that the people who were alive then, by and large, are not alive now. Or if they are, they're not the talking heads on TV. They're not the ones talking about this. So. Anyway, Jim Bunning, the Republican from Kentucky, this is not a stimulus package, but a massive government spending bill that my grandchildren and great-grandchildren will have to pay for. Jim, where were you when Bush was spending $3 trillion for a war in Iraq that we didn't want or need with borrowed money? Richard Burr, the Republican from North Carolina, if the bill Democrats have proposed in the Senate does not change radically, then I will not be able to support it. Oh, that's sweet. Saxby Chambliss. The guy who said that Max Cleland, who left three limbs on the battlefield in Vietnam, was not patriotic. Remember that? Saxby Chambliss, this tragic Republican from Georgia, unless they raise the tax credits from about 35% of the package to somewhere around a 45 or 50% range, I doubt you'll see many Republican senators voting for it. Yeah, so on the one hand, you've got Republican senators saying, you know, this is a terrible thing because we're borrowing more money in the name of our children and our grandchildren. And then you get other Republicans coming along saying, yeah, we need to cut more taxes so that we borrow even more money in the name of our children and our grandchildren. And what good is that going to do the economy again? How is it going to help the economy if we give tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires? Oh, so that they can toss it into they can buy derivatives or something. They can go back into the casino. They can reinflate the bubble. How about having an economy that is a real economy, an economy that is actually based on sound economic principles, like we manufacture things, like we make things because people want to buy them, that the reason that people want to buy them is because they have money in their pocket, that the reason they have money in their pocket is because they've got a decent job that pays a fair wage, a living wage, a wage that's enough to, as Teddy Roosevelt said, put their kids through school all the way through college, to provide for vacations, to provide for retirement, and that they have a national health care program. Why don't we acknowledge the fact that health care is part of a national infrastructure? And if we're going to have an infrastructure bill, let's make national health care a large part of it. Let's make it the centerpiece of it, because it is the core of the national infrastructure. It's our business infrastructure. It is our the whole thing right across the board. The core of that, the key to that infrastructure, is the ability of people to start businesses, the ability of people to run businesses, the ability, and that is so enhanced, as you can see in all the other industrialized countries of the world, so enhanced by companies being able to start up and compete on a level playing ground when it comes to offering health care to their employees. One of the toughest, I would say probably the toughest hurdle that entrepreneurs have right now. You want to start a small business in America, the biggest challenge you're going to have is not how much taxes you're going to pay. In fact, most startup businesses pay no taxes for a number of years because they don't make any money for the first few years. They're building their business. They're reinvesting everything. The biggest challenge they have is that the large multinational corporations can offer health care at a much cheaper rate than can startups because they've got a larger pool. And they can distribute it over more people. They can distribute the risk. They can get it cheaper. That is anti-competitive. You want to build the infrastructure of this country? Build a national health care system. Let's let Jim Clyburn, who said that we should take health care off the table for a year or two. No, let's make it part of the stimulus package. Or let's make it the second priority. This is something we've got to do now. Let's let Nancy Pelosi know. Let's let Steny Hoyer know. Healthcare now, and roll back the Reagan tax cuts.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2070.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program, 34 minutes past the hour. We've been talking about the economy, the stimulus bill, how things can, you know, move, the politics of it all, the Great Depression, the first Republican Great Depression, maybe this is the second, all this kind of thing. And I wanted to just bring in a voice for whom I have a lot of respect, Jack Canfield. Back more than a decade ago, thereabouts, Louise and I were at the Maui Writers Conference, and a regular writers conference. As you know, I've written a lot of books, and Jack Canfield gave a talk about how he started the Chicken Soup series. And he's got a new book out. It's called Chicken Soup for the Soul, My Resolution, 101 Stories, Great Ideas for Your Mind, Body, and Wallet. Jack, welcome to the show.
My pleasure, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. Chickensoup.com, by the way, the website. And, you know, I want to plug your book and the idea of making resolutions, but I'd like to do it in a context because you're one of the most brilliant entrepreneurs I know. You took this idea, as I recall, I still remember the talk that you gave, and you said nobody had come up with the idea of selling books in 7-Elevens. Do you remember that?
I do.
And you took an idea – and turned it into a multimillion-dollar business. And you've done a really great job with this, and I'm sure that part of it was your making a resolution and keeping it, like consistent with your new book about how to keep resolutions, Chicken Soup for the Soul, my resolution. What is your best advice to people today, based on all the thousands of stories that you've heard from people over the years and that you've published in the Chicken Soup series, Jack Canfield? What's your best advice for people who just got laid off, who are looking at the possibility of layoffs, who are looking at businesses that are faltering and failing, to step forward and make, you know, to use a terrible old cliche, but I think it's probably apropos, to make lemonade out of these lemons?
Well, there's two aspects to this. One is, how do you get yourself back to work? And the other is, how do you deal with it when you're not there yet? Yeah. And so let's take them one at a time. There's always a gift in every tragedy. And, you know, sometimes you'd rather learn it a different way. But what a lot of people are learning right now is about what's really important. What we're finding what's really important is family, keeping our bodies healthy, staying positive, learning how to do that. A lot of us haven't learned how to do that. It's important to read inspirational books and literature and listen to CDs and listen to radio shows like yours. So we keep positive. We stay focused on that which is working. Like right now, I teach everyone to keep a gratitude list. And it's hard to be grateful when you've lost your job or your company's, you know, failing, or you've lost your mortgage or whatever. But the fact is, you're still here. You're still alive. There's lots to be grateful for. I mean, we could be in a third world country where we're living in a hut. Most of us are in homes. We have electricity. We have radio. We have television. We have services that, you know, are good. We have a new president who's bringing us hope. We have friends. We have family. We have our health. So if you'll take a few minutes every day and just be grateful, focus on either writing a list, keeping a journal, saying it out loud. My wife and I do it with each other at the end of the day. What I'm grateful for is it keeps you focused on the positive, makes you feel good. And we know that the most important thing you can do at any time in your life is to feel good. It's not the external circumstances that are making people miserable. It's what they're telling themselves it means, or what they're fantasizing about the future. We're going to lose our home. We're going to be out on the street. We're going to be disenfranchised in some way. And the truth is, most people, you know, we have a 7 or 8% unemployment rate when it's at its worst. It still means 92% of us are employed.
Right.
So there may be a little downsizing. Not as many people are coming into our restaurants. Not as many people buying my books. But we know we'll get through it. And to focus on the vision of what you want it to look like, and then have a plan of action. Take action. You know, I've been in this whole law of attraction thing that came around with the movie The Secret and the book The Secret.
Sure.
And everyone thinks all you have to do is, you know, have a vision of what you want, sit in your living room, it'll show up. The last six letters in the word attraction are A-C-T-I-O-N. You must take action. So, you know, talk about your feelings, get positive, read some uplifting stuff, decide what you want, and then go out and look for it. There are people finding jobs. I mean, I was just on the Internet the other day. I think it was Whole Foods is hiring 380 people. So it's not the 4,000 that Microsoft might have laid off or something like that, but there are jobs. And the question is, don't worry about what's happening to the masses. Say, I'm going to be one of those people that does find a job. Focus on you and your family and your friends, and you can have potluck dinners instead of going out. You can, you know, play with your kids instead of, you know, going to the movies. And actually, it creates more bonding than sitting watching a movie when you're actually doing the kind of things, playing games. It doesn't cost anything to play Scrabble. Most everyone already owns one. So, you know, look for the simpler things in life and start appreciating them. Then have a plan to take action.
Yeah, and I would add to that, channel the emotions that you may have around this stuff into action, particularly, you know, personal and economic action, but also political action to change our political systems. Chicken Soup for the Soul, my resolution, 101 great stories, great ideas for your mind, body, and wallet, the new book by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen. And, Jack, thanks for dropping by today and giving us a positive shot in the arm.
My pleasure, Tom.
It's always great talking with you, and much appreciated. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Bob in Clifton, Tennessee. Bob, you're on the air. What's up?
Good morning, Tom. You know, it's mainstream now for people to talk about FDR and the programs, and I certainly agree that those things are necessary now. I agree with you that we ought to go back and undo the Reagan tax cuts and re-regulate. But I think at this point, since that's mainstream, we should bring Teddy Roosevelt mainstream now.
Yeah.
We need to bust up these trusts.
Yep, too big to fail is too big to exist.
Well, we need to bust up this vertical integration. We'll never have a good democracy without a good media. And when these corporate slaves, one corporation person owning another corporation, we will never have a free media. And until we get into the Teddy Roosevelt mode and bust up these huge conglomerates that are, quote, too big to fail, I don't feel that we'll be making any sustainable progress.
Well said, Bob. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Bruce in Spokane, or Spokane. Which is it, Bruce?
Hey, hello.
Can.
Hey, I just listened to your last guy that was on there, and I totally agree with him. I think that the unions are one of the biggest issues that we need to bust up, because they're the ones that are kind of holding back the American auto people from actually succeeding in what they're doing.
So you think, Bruce, we should all get in a race to the bottom wage wise? It's a fine thing that workers' wages go down and down and down.
I think competition breeds good value.
Competition for wages. If you have workers fighting against each other for jobs, what that does is it drives down wages.
Workers is the key element here. These people are getting paid not to work, not to work.
No. Workers is the key word here, Bruce. Workers are the people who are producing things of value. It's the companies that are taking that value. And in producing those things of value, they should be paid appropriately. But they have no power in the workplace to say, hey, you're going to have to pay me or I'm not going to work.
That takes me to my next point. Government workers do not produce anything. So why are we increasing the government size?
Oh, yeah, let's just get rid of the fire department. Let's get rid of the socialist police department. Let's get rid of our socialist roads. Let's get rid of our socialist school system. Let's get rid of our socialist army. You're absolutely right. Government programs do no good at all. Bruce, you're one of the most brilliant philosophers who has ever called into this program. Thank you very much. JR in Vancouver. Hey, JR.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
That last guy, I mean, he's typical of what's wrong with – I mean, I understand the concept of competition, but if you want to talk about competition, you have to go with the caller previous. We're GM. I mean, why don't we have one separate company building Buicks, another company building Chevys, another building GM? If you had that kind of competition, then it would increase manufacturing and it would provide better quality for American products. But what you have,
I agree. By and large, they shouldn't have been allowed to merge in the first place. Although in most cases there were brands that were going out of business and they just acquired the brands and then they built them back up. But the bottom line is that anytime you have a handful, you have 5-6 companies that dominate any industry, in my opinion, that qualifies as a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act. And the government should be stepping in and saying, wait a minute, this is not capitalism played by the rules of the game of capitalism that are the kind of decent rules that are actually going to cause people to, you know, businesses to work and people to remain employed. Well said, JR. David in Bellingham. Got a minute before the break, David. What's up?
Okay, just real quick. Hi, Tom. I'm just getting tired of hearing this myth about 7% unemployment. We all know that that's just those people who are getting benefits. It doesn't count all those people who don't get benefits anymore. They've run out. Or in my case, who was self-employed, whose business went away because of the real estate.
If you go to shadowstats.org, you can see the real unemployment rates and you know the real GDP and everything else, and you know the real unemployment rate is quite substantial. It's probably in the neighborhood of 13-14% right now, and it would include
my guess is it's higher than that.
Yeah. Well, if you include underemployment and you include people who are trained specifically for areas in which they are not working, then the numbers get really out of whack. I remember back a few years ago, one of the major hotel chains was bragging about the fact that a third of their bellboys had college degrees. And I'm scratching my head going, well, I suppose, you know, for the very wealthy clientele, they're knowing that, you know, an educated person is going to handle their bags. Maybe that's something to sell. But isn't that a sad commentary on the state of the American economy? Isn't that a sad commentary on state of American education, too? 45 minutes past the hour.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620 KPOJ.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Ed Schultz.
So there's going to have to be some more discussion about this, which is healthy, which is positive.
Noon to 3.
And I think that we as lefties have got to make sure we know how to embrace all this stuff.
He calls them the way he sees them.
Just because Pelosi and Obama may disagree on the timing of the repealing of the Bush tax cuts doesn't mean that it's nuclear war.
The Ed Schultz Show.
There's going to be more than enough stuff to talk about.
Noon to 3. AM 620 KPOJ.
Online at 620kpoj.com.
Dear Mom and Dad, well, the Army has finally seen fit to give me some time off, so I'm writing to tell you that I'm doing fine over here. And Mom, since you asked, if anyone wants to help, just tell them to contact the USO. You can't believe how much they do for us. With love, your son Michael.
The USO depends on the generosity of the American people. To find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Have you ever found that one size doesn't fit all? Shoes, clothes, or even sporting gear, the best stuff is fitted to you. That's true for furniture, too. Ridiculously comfortable Lazy Boy reclining chairs come in over 70 unique sizes and styles. Whatever your size, tall, short, long-legged, petite, there's a chair for you. Each one features patented designs that provide full body and lumbar support. Unlike cheap recliners that pretty much give you a feet up, feet down, and that big gap between the seat and the back that's covered by a piece of cloth, that's not going to support you. What you really need is stylish and well-constructed Lazy Boy furniture. Each piece comes with a lifetime warranty, and with more than 1,200 fabrics and leathers to choose from, you can customize your choice so your perfectly fitted chair will perfectly complement your home. Shop our six area stores or online at lazyboyportland.com. You're home now. Put your feet up.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. Who says there's no such thing as a free lunch? This month at Floor Trends Northwest in Sellwood, when you schedule your complimentary flooring estimate, you also get a gift certificate good for lunch at either Hawthorne Fish House Southeast or Corbett Fish House Southwest. Now's the time to start planning for your spring home improvement projects. Schedule your complimentary flooring estimate, tile, hardwood, or carpet, by calling 503-236-8775 or visit floortrendsnw.com.
Get out of the cold and into the warmth of an Oregon hot spring spa during our floor model clearance sale. Soak in a used spa for as little as $9.99 or relax in a new hot tub starting at just $2,999. Save thousands off of top-of-the-line hot tubs. Offers are limited to what's on the floor. You could be in the hot tub you've been dreaming of by the weekend. Log on to OregonHotTub.com to find the location nearest you. Oregon Hot Spring Spas, the one friends recommend.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Cause we're going fast. You can sit beside me when the world comes down. If it doesn't matter, then just turn around. We don't need our bags and we can just leave town. You can sit beside me when the world comes down.
Yeah, we're all in this together. I mean, isn't that the concept on which this country was founded? Isn't that the basis of democracy? Small-d democracy? Anyhow, it's...
Chickens in the sky.
Let's have our pigeon alert for the day. Yes, an Australian traveler was caught with two live pigeons stuffed in his pants. I kid you not, following a trip to the Middle East, customs officials said Friday, a 23-year-old man was searched after authorities discovered two eggs in a vitamin container in his luggage. They found the pigeons, live pigeons, wrapped in padded envelopes and held to each of his legs with a pair of tights. They also seized an undeclared eggplant. Now, you tell me that this is not an example of a human being controlled by robots from the planet Xenu. There is no other possible explanation. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Scott in Houston, Texas. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Tom, great to talk to you as always. Great show.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, I'm glad you kind of put that guy in his place, the guy that was calling about how, you know, we should get rid of all these big government programs, you know, these silly things like public schools and the military and all that. You know, the stupidity, I'm sorry to use that word, but, I mean, it's just astounding. Anytime I get into a conversation with somebody who calls themselves a conservative, they're whining about all these government programs.
Mm-hmm.
You ask them, are you driving on public roads? Have you ever used or do you continue to use the mail service? Do your kids ever go to public school? You know, if you live out in the country, who do you think subsidizes the fact that they're running these power lines 50 miles out in the country for four homes or something?
Yeah, and telephone lines. And aren't you glad that your food isn't killing you and, you know, and that your drugs are safe and that your doctor actually has a license? And, I mean, it just goes on and on.
They operate from the standpoint that government can do no good, and I feel quite the contrary. I think in most cases it does well, but you know, like a large company, like say our military, you just have to keep an eye on it. There's always going to be a huge amount of fraud, waste, and you just have to regulate it. You know.
Yeah, and that's the problem. The military's gotten a huge pass on this thing. They've been untouchable. The two frauds, I would say, that have been perpetrated on the American people over the last 40 years by conservatives, by and large Republican conservatives, but there's no shortage of Democrats who have jumped into this camp, you know, on and off over the years, and some who continue to, are number one, that the military budget should be absolutely sacrosanct and that it is entirely appropriate that we spend more on so-called defense in the United States than all other countries in the world combined, and we still have 11,000 nuclear weapons enough to destroy the planet, what, 100 times over or something. That's crazy. And
absolutely.
And B, the idea that government is somehow intrinsically evil. I mean, I can point to governments that are evil. Robert Mugabe's government in Zimbabwe is evil. The Soviet Union didn't work particularly well. I mean, it started with a good idea, I think, but it didn't work. Communism doesn't work, and it became a very evil form of government. There's a whole bunch of them around the world. The government in Burma is about as evil as it gets. But the United States of America is a democracy. We're a democratic republic, a constitutionally limited representative democratic republic, and as such, the government is us. And so when these conservatives say, oh, they hate the government, it's terrible, or can't do anything wrong, anything right, what they're talking about is us. They're saying that we, the American people, are incompetent. And I'm sorry, I think we're pretty good.
Absolutely, bro. Absolutely.
Yeah. So thanks a lot for the call, Scott. Well said. Mike in Oregon, in Portland, listening on KPOJ. What's on your mind, Mike?
Hi, Tom. I've been hearing a lot of commentators expressing surprise at how intransigent the Republicans have been in this Congress regarding things such as the stimulus package.
Yeah, they're just astounded. The Republicans are behaving the same way they've been behaving since 1947, when they vetoed Harry Truman's first attempt to have a National Health Care Act.
Well, arguably worse, and I would use an epidemiological model to explain it. Think of the last 8 years as a kind of bacterial infection that the country was exposed to back in 1980 after a long incubation period. It really laid us out for 8 solid years, the last 8 years.
Yeah.
And think of the elections in 2006 and 2008 as rounds of antibiotics.
Yeah.
Well, what do you have left over after an antibiotic treatment on a really virulent bacterial infection? You have the resistant strain. That's all that's left over in the reddest
right.
of the red places.
And you got to, and actually the resistant strain sometimes represents more of a threat.
Yes, exactly. So you can think of Mitch McConnell in Kentucky and his ilk as sort of the political equivalent of flesh-eating bacteria that you pick up in the hospital.
Yeah, Yeah, we we need to, let's make this a little more holistic model. A, we need to develop, antibiotics that will work against the resistant variety. But B, we also need to go back to the healthy lifestyle. We need to get our immune system going. We need to get our body politic functioning right. Interesting metaphor, and well done. Thank you very much. Sean, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, how are you, Tom? Have you read the Huffington Post today?
I have. Which part of it are you referring to?
Well, you know what I mean. I'm reading a particular side of an article about how this wishy-washy of the Democrats are being influenced by the Republicans. It says in here, for instance, ever since Obama was elevated to the Oval Office, his leadership skill hasn't seemed to rub off the Democrats in Congress.
Yeah.
And for example, it says here, I read today that if Obama selects New Hampshire Republican Senator Jed Gregg to the Commerce Secretary, the Democrats.
I know, and then it turns out that there was a deal, a backroom deal. This was a Blagojevich kind of deal that was cut between the Republicans and the governor of New Hampshire, and it's outrageous. It's wrong, and it's outrageous. And Obama, in my opinion, should have withdrawn his nomination once he knew about this deal. But it's a done deal now. He's already
but
gone ahead and announced it.
You know, Tom, I was going to ask. This is the time when people really need to call these bastards. And let him have it. I mean, now is the time when we have to go to work to
call,
make things
call
happen.
Which bastard, Sean? Who are you referring to?
Well, all the politicians in Capitol Hills, you know.
Oh, they need to call the Republicans you're talking about. I thank you for the call, Sean. And, no, I don't think that language is over the top. Maybe it is. If that's one of the words you can't say on the radio, my apologies. I don't think so, but in any case, but the point is that the Democrats need to get their act together. They need to realize that the Republicans are a virulent strain.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you in the second hour of our program. Dan Gaynor on the line with us. He is the Vice President and T. Boone Pickens Fellow at the Business and Media Institute. The conservative think tank businessandmedia.org is their website. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be back. How are you doing today?
Just fine. Tom Daschle just withdrew his name from nomination for Commerce Secretary. And which, frankly, from my point of view, is a good thing. And I'm curious to get your take on it and how the health. I'm mixing up my Health and Human Services. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, I think it's a good thing. I think it really, no matter which political side of the fence you are on, I think it looked bad for government. I mean, he was one of three people who've already been nominated for positions who had tax problems. I haven't anybody heard of H&R Block?
Yeah, I was frankly more, his tax problems were a little more extensive than Tim Geithner's. I found myself in the same position Tim Geithner did when I worked overseas once and thought that my employer was deducting money. And it turned out, a year later I learned that they hadn't because they didn't. But, yeah, I thought that they did, that kind of thing. I mean, I can understand that, frankly.
There's a big difference, though. When they found out Geithner hadn't paid his taxes, and they said, well, you didn't pay your taxes for X years, he was only obligated to pay for some of the time, and he did.
Yeah.
And then only when he got nominated did he pay for the other time. And he also had
he did what his CPA had told him to do. He did what the law required. But my point is, but I'd like to take this beyond who's good or who's bad with regard to taxes, Dan. Let's talk about the actual policy here, because we can pick on politicians' shortcomings forever. I don't think it's going to really further the discourse. Yeah, exactly. But with regard to policy, I would like to, the reason, frankly, why I was opposed to Tom Daschle was because he's been historically very involved with the healthcare industry, with the lobbyists for the healthcare industry, and because he's not a fan of single payer healthcare. And I think that we should have somebody in that position who wants to push it as far as it'll go, and who will be restrained if that's the, you know, in the checks and balances notion, as it were, by folks on your side to some extent, rather than somebody who's already starting out halfway there saying, oh yeah, we should keep the private for-profit health insurance system that we have. And I'm curious who you think would be a good nominee for HHS.
No name comes to mind. I had heard literally just minutes before the phone call that this was happening. I hadn't had a chance to think through. Obama believes in the healthcare private sector, you know, as well. So he's going to find somebody who, although you don't like it, probably who will reflect that opinion. Hopefully he'll find somebody who doesn't have any black marks on his resume, because you can't get anything done if everybody's running around picking at somebody. Yeah. I'm actually surprised that Obama didn't pull the plug on her, and maybe he did, because the interesting thing here is he actually knew about this months in advance and didn't tell the vetting people until after he was named.
Right, and there was another nominee. I don't have the article right in front of me, who just pulled out because of tax problems, and I think maybe that kind of shamed Daschle into it or whatever. But in any case, the politics of it all. Let's take this to the question that, you know, we were originally going to talk about, which is basically how much socialism is acceptable to conservatives in the United States. You know, I think you agree that socialist fire departments are a good thing, right?
Well, when you say socialist fire departments, that's
right.
There we probably disagree with the phrasing the issue. There are some things that government can do well. I don't think any conservative disputes this. So when people try to say, well, you guys are anti-government, no. We're anti-government out of control, which government tends to get over time.
Well, you know, I remember when I worked in Russia, I worked in Kaliningrad for a while, building a program for Salem International. You can read all about it over at saleminternational.org. And the cars, you know, the old East German Trebbies, and I forget the name of the Russian
the
made cars.
I love the Zills. They were classically
Eastern Bloc. Yeah, with the two-stroke engines. I mean, you know, these cars were a disaster. I don't want my government making cars. I don't want the government making TVs. I don't, you know, it was an absolute disaster. The hotel that I was living in on and off, and Louise and I stayed in a couple times, the old Aeroflot Hotel. I remember one time we stayed there, the third floor, the elevator wouldn't stop on the third floor. So you had to go up to the fourth floor or take the elevator to the fourth floor and then walk down one or, you know, like that. I mean, it was because they, you know, even their elevator company didn't do a good job. There's a lot of things that no liberal would ever want the government to do. You know, all these things that have it. But what about the commons? If the fire department protects us from fire, if our government protects us from our house burning down, shouldn't our government protect us from our body being eaten out by cancer?
I mean, you use that example. It's right, you know, near and dear to my heart. But in a lot of parts of this country, government doesn't protect you from fire. A lot of parts of this country are protected by volunteers, the community banding together, and it's all.
But
volunteers.
That's government too.
No, it's not.
It's just government that's not collecting taxes. It absolutely is, Dan. The government in the United States is we the people, the first three words of the Constitution.
But
if we the people get together collectively and voluntarily, it's still we the people.
No, but it is not government. It's not collecting any taxes. You're not mandated to join, participate, or be involved.
But that's not the definition of government.
No, but we're 2 months away from tax time. Tell me if you wanted to voluntarily choose not to pay your taxes. You can't do that. But there are a lot of areas. I mean, you can't call a volunteer fire department that's not part of the government part of the government. It's just not.
It
if
is.
The government doesn't control
volunteer
it.
Fire. I lived in a community with a volunteer fire department in Romney, Vermont, or New Hampshire, rather. And I'm telling you, the volunteer fire departments are you know, they're local people who get together, but they're typically administered by the city.
Typically, not all cases. It really isn't.
Well, I've never seen a case where they weren't.
it varies widely between, you know, there's some guidelines, but I mean, cities or governments regulate or administer a lot of things. It doesn't mean they control it.
I think, Dan, we're wandering again into the area of minutia that misses the big picture, which is the big picture is how much socialism is reasonable. I think you've agreed that, you know, socialist fire departments are okay, socialist police departments are okay, but my big question, and you know, to Tom Daschle's nomination, if we agree that we want all of us collectively to protect our house from being gutted by fire, or our home from being gutted by criminals coming in with AK-47s, why don't we want our government to protect our bodies from being gutted by cancer?
Well, because one of the reasons is you destroy incentives. You destroy the incentives for people to come up with new medicines, new cures, new options.
How?
Because government controls.
How?
You know, wait.
Do you think that there's no incentive for companies to come up with new and better weapons for police departments to use? New and better firefighting equipment? All the time the state of the art in police and fire is improving.
Because they sell this equipment to a lot of parts around the country. Again, we're going to get lost.
Well, I'm not suggesting that the government should get in the business of manufacturing scalpels, Dan.
Yeah, there's a great quote from Ludwig von Mises, the economist. Socialism is not an alternative to capitalism. It's an alternative to any system under which men can live as human beings.
Yeah, Ludwig von Mises was a crackpot.
That's a responsible statement.
Well, in my opinion, it's actually a true statement, and I'm probably one of the few people that you've ever met in your life who's actually read von Mises.
I meet a lot of people in the conservative movement who have read von Mises.
Okay. Well, in any case, his belief that first of all, when he was referring to socialism, he was referring to Marxism, because, you know, von Mises was writing back when Marxism was new and fresh and everybody was thinking, gee, isn't this cool? And I don't think that you and I, either one of us, when we're talking, using the word socialism, are referring to Marxism. And this is another problem we have in the vocabulary in the United States.
Getting back to the health care point, yeah, we as a society...
With the minute we have left here, Dan, I'm sorry.
You know, we as a society can decide to choose that way. With the democracy, we get to choose. We also get to choose not. Many of us don't want it because many of us know that once government gets involved, it will limit our choices and restrict what we can do as individuals.
So you still want to have the right, when you have a heart attack, to go through the Yellow Pages and call 5 ambulance companies and get the lowest price?
No, I want to have the right, when I have a major problem like Ted Kennedy did, I want the right to go to the most expensive doctor I can find so I can possibly get the treatment, even if my health care company won't handle it. And I don't.
Well, then make a lot of money, but what about the poor people who can't go to any doctor at all?
They're already covered by and large by, you know, this whole fantasy of 47 million Americans is nowhere near true.
Okay, so we have enough socialism for you.
We have too much socialism.
Okay, all righty. Dan Gaynor, businessandmedia.org is the website. Dan, always good talking with you. Thanks for dropping
by.
Take care. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
I was driving my rig down the interstate. Had an on-time bonus, couldn't afford to be late. So to save on fuel, save time and cash, I fly by the scale house, move on past with PrePass.
PrePass.
It's a bypass system, first of its kind. Checks my weight and my docks, driving 65. Then a green light flashes up on my dash. And while the other eight stop, I just move on past with PrePass.
PrePass.
With your good driving record, PrePass can save you time and money on every haul. Highway sensors check your weight and certifications as you drive highway speed. If everything checks, a green light on your dash says drive on by. Try PrePass free. We guarantee you'll want it along on every haul. Visit PrePass.com or call 888-559-PASS to try PrePass free. That's PrePass.com or 888-559-PASS. 888-559-PASS.
She's loud, she's proud, and she definitely draws a crowd.
We cannot let the American porn industry go down.
Randy Rhodes.
So why is the porn industry asking for a bailout? I know that I've given the porn industry at least $5 billion myself. So there's no need for the bailout, Larry.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
If you cannot make money by producing pornography in this country,
3 to 6,
you are pretty much freaking hopeless.
On AM 620 KPOJ
and 620KPOJ.com.
Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Did you know that right now you could be paying too much for your life insurance? It's true, because right now term life insurance is at its lowest rates in years. So you could be saving money. How much? At SelectQuote, we shop and compare for you. So a 40-year-old man in excellent health could get a 10-year, $500,000 term life policy for under $19 a month. That's right, $500,000 of term life for under $19 a month. How much could we save you? Give us a call. 1-800-600-1312. At SelectQuote, we've helped hundreds of thousands of Americans do what's right for their families. And save money. We're here to help you, too. So, want to save money on your term life insurance fast? Go to SelectQuote.com or pick up the phone and get your free quote. 1-800-600-1312. That's 1-800-600-1312.
And now for the bonus round. John's uncle's cousin's mother's friend is what relation to John?
Curmudgeon.
Correct. How many ounces are in an anagram?
8.26.
Correct. How much do Netflix members pay in late fees?
Nothing!
Correct! Netflix. Choose your movies online and have DVDs delivered in about one business day. No late fees ever. Start your free trial today. Netflix.
See terms of use.
So the other morning, I get an email from Moe's, my absolute favorite deli, whose pastrami I would actually kill for, which is probably why I gave him my email in the first place. Anyway, I'm like, wow. Moe's sending emails with coupons and photos? I want to bite my computer screen. Then it hits me. Eggs and pastrami hash for breakfast.
Email marketing from ConstantContact.com helps showcase your business, just like Mo. There's even free phone support with real live people. Get a free 60-day trial at ConstantContact.com.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Spread the love around, you know? Sounds like a plan. 21 minutes past the hour, and speaking of volunteer fire departments, actually, maybe these guys get a paycheck. This is an assistant fire marshal. Burlington, well, in fact, they do. Burlington, Vermont. I used to live near there. I know that they've got an actual real fire department. In fact, Bernie Sanders used to be the mayor of Burlington, Vermont. Firefighters had to get creative when faced with a man stuck inside a chimney. Assistant Fire Marshal Thomas Middleton said police were called early Sunday by a woman who said she heard someone calling for help. They followed the voice and footprints on a snowy roof to find the unidentified man in the chimney. He told them he didn't know how he got there. He was stuck for about 4 hours. First, they tried to pull him out with a rope. It didn't work, so they had to disassemble part of the chimney. So, does the guy have health care? I don't know. It's strange things, strange goings on. It's a wonderful country. We live in a wonderful country. I love the idiosyncrasies of this place. Paula in Carbondale, Illinois. Hey, Paula, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom.
Last week, someone called and she was talking about, she was a medical records person, and she was against computerizing medical records because of the, you know, that anyone could get into them that has a code to get into that computer.
Right.
And I agree with her, but I think there's something much worse. And, you know, if you look at what Obama's trying to do, and it's like a stealth $50 billion, what they're trying to do is have a computerized national system of medical records so they can get into your medical records more easily. Remember in the old days when they wanted to tap your phone, they had to put a bug on your phone? Mm-hmm. But now they have it, you know, Russell Tice talks about how they set it up so that you didn't have to do that. You could be centralized.
Right.
Or they've set it up so instead of stuffing ballot boxes, they can run it through a central computer and
yep.
steal the election that way. Well, that's what they want to do with your medical records. And I think we should all rise up and oppose this because it will not be used for anything good.
Yeah. It may be that it will produce some improved efficiencies, but this is one of those areas where keeping things decentralized seems to me like a good idea rather than highly centralizing.
Exactly. There's an ACLU video that's really good where this guy calls up the pizza place and he says he wants a double meat pizza, and the woman has access to his cholesterol, and she said, well, there'll be a $20 surcharge because, you know, your cholesterol's too high.
Right.
And, you know,
I remember that.
Yeah, it's a great little video, but you know what? That's what they're trying to do right now. So everyone should oppose it and don't fall for this efficiency thing. There's no reason why, you know, that people need to have access to everybody in the country's medical records. I'm a nurse. We can take care of people without knowing, you know, your entire medical records.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think people should just be able to own their own medical records and carry them around. Maybe you could put them on a microchip and you could stick it in your wallet or your purse or something like that. If it's going to be electronic. When I walk into a doctor's office, I can say here, and they can read it and go, oh, okay, now I know, or something like that. I mean, there has to be a way other than saying, let's put it on a giant computer where the Russians can hack into it, and the next thing you know, it's going to be on the National Enquirer next to a picture of Britney Spears. I mean, it's
there
just,
you go.
Yeah. Paul, thank you very much, and thanks for listening to us on WINI. It really is an interesting topic and one that's going to get more and more complex and just topical as time goes on. Carson in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Carson, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I got a quick question for you. You
mm-hmm.
know, the Republicans vowed to fight any effort to seat Al Franken in the Senate.
Right.
Couldn't the Democrats do that with this replacement senator from New Hampshire?
Well, they could, but it looks like... It looks like the Obama administration has just rolled over on this thing, and no straight answers are coming out. We talked with my colleague Carl Wolfson, talked with Ellen Ratner this morning of the Talk Radio News Service. I mean, they're accredited White House reporters. They're right there in the White House newsroom and talking to the press secretary and all that kind of stuff. And the administration's not talking about whether the deal was cut in advance. You know, whether the Obama administration knew. I would think that part of the political calculus, when you appoint somebody to a job like this, particularly a political job, you know, part of the political calculus is the political consequences of it. Part of it is you want somebody who is dedicated to the job. And Judd Gregg is a guy who is a very conservative Republican who, in fact, has voted against funding the Commerce Department. And you're going to put him in charge of the Commerce Department? Hey, wait a minute. There's something wrong with that. But on the other hand, if this gives us the 60th Democratic vote, then we can hold our breath and say, you know, or hold our nose rather and say, you know, this guy, he's not going to be terrible and he will do what the president says. After all, he works for him. Cabinet officers are not like legislators. They don't just get to go off in their own direction. They have to do what the president wants or they can quit their job. I mean, that's the bottom line. They're employees, as it were. They serve at the will and pleasure of the president. So, you know, but you have to believe that the getting a 60th Democrat was a piece of the equation. And if this Democratic governor of Governor Lynch of New Hampshire has cut a backroom deal with the Republicans to put a Republican into the Senate, I mean, there's something weird about that. There's something sick and twisted about that. There's something Blagojevich about that. And frankly, I think, my personal opinion, is that if Obama did not know about this before he made the announcement, they should now say, you know, we didn't know this was going on, and pull it. Even if it looks political, pull it anyway.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Stay up all night, best friends, yeah, talking till the daylight. Took the joys alongside the pain, with not much to lose, but so much to gain. Now you're hearing me, cause I don't wanna miss it. You were drift on memory bliss, it was grass the street. On a rainy night, I was down on one knee, and you were mine for life. We were thinking we would never be apart, but your name tattooed across my heart.
Oh, it's the program where despair is not an option. Get out there, get active, my friends. Our work has not ended with the election of Obama. It has just begun, as we are seeing. Dan in Shelburne, Massachusetts, listening to WHAI. You wanted to follow up on our conversation with Dan Gaynor about volunteer firemen?
Yes, I'm a volunteer firefighter in a little country town, about 90 miles west of Boston. Mm-hmm. And our particular department is... There's a small tax that every homeowner pays, about, in my case, it's about $150 a year, to support our local fire department. In other towns, it's supported by the town budget. There are some fire districts around that are supported almost as a charity, where the firefighters have to go out and do bake sales and everything else to raise money. So yeah. There are those, but I'd like to point out that every fire department is supported by the larger governments. Most fire engines, there's a federal grant, you know, to help you buy equipment. The local has to, you know, we have to raise money on our own, but the federal government supplies training. We get sent to the National Training Center in Gaithersburg, Maryland, every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that government supports these kinds of things.
Right. So even a volunteer fire department is still a socialist.
Oh yes, it's not the, you know, and the, you know, they did have free market solutions back in the 18th, 19th century. You had to have a medallion on your home or your business. You'd pay a private company, and basically, if you didn't have one of these medallions on your business, and you know the fires took out, they'd come up and they'd say, "You didn't pay us the money. We're going to let it burn down." And then what happens is the community as a whole is left with a burned out building in the middle of my neighborhood,
right,
for a couple of years till it gets rebuilt. So when you talk about the Commonwealth, it's in our common interest not to let each other's houses burn down, and that's when we decide we're going to support this through taxation.
Yeah, and I would argue that while it's in our common interest not to let our houses burn down, not to let our houses be invaded by thugs or bandits or burglars, it's also in our common interest not to have our neighbor come down with tuberculosis and have it be untreated.
Yeah, and you know, the ambulance services, you know, the ambulances are sort of on that line between private and public. Some places the fire department does the ambulances, other places it's a private enterprise, and it's pretty complicated when you try to do those things.
Yeah, it is. Dan, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for your service to your community as a volunteer firefighter.
Well, it's a lot of fun. I'd like to encourage people to volunteer.
Yeah, indeed. Amen. Good on you, Dan. Grady in San Francisco. Hey, Grady, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, thanks, Tom. I just wanted to call to say and kind of disagree with that woman who was a little bit afraid about centralizing medical records.
Okay.
I am. Yeah, I'm a 20-year HIV survivor, and my care is coordinated across several agencies here in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a part of it. It's an opt-in system, but it is a centralized system. But I have to say, without it, my care would have been much more complicated and much more difficult to get and access in a timely and quick manner. So I think there's sort of reasons to sort of consider both arguments and not just reject the centralizing of these things just out of hand, you know.
But your medical records are not centralized at a federal level. They're not in a Washington D.C. computer that's accessible to, you know.
No, they're not. But they are centralized to San Francisco's public health central record system. So it is a government system.
With your permission, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's really sensitive information. You know what I mean? You know, there's no laws in California to protect me from being fired for having HIV.
Huh. So that's a shame.
It's just the way that it is, and it's nice to kind of know that my care is just really, really coordinated. So yeah. I understand the fears. I know, you know, people are really afraid of this information getting out, and those fears are completely justified. And I think that what that merits is very close scrutiny of any such centralized system and not taking anything for granted as far as security of the information.
You know, Grady, what I think this all highlights is that much like the abortion debate, for example, there are some things that we need to have a national dialogue about.
Yeah.
You know, we need to work this stuff out. And national health care is a piece of it, and centralized medical records is a piece of the national health care piece. I know that there's a lot of conservatives who are hysterical about centralized records who are using that as a device to bash the idea of national health care, for example. And
exactly.
And there are liberals, on the other hand, who are concerned about privacy issues and Fourth Amendment rights. So we need to have a good national discussion of this. And I don't have a quick and easy answer to it. But you're
and I'm not sure there is one.
Yeah, it may well be that what we end up with is an imperfect system, but it's better than all the alternatives, is, you know, the old Winston Churchill joke about democracy. Grady, thank you very much for the
thank
call.
Thank you. Thanks,
appreciate
Tom.
It. Thank you. Philip in San Jose. Hey, Philip.
Hey, how you doing?
Just great. What's up?
Hey, listen, I'm calling because the job now is open for the Health and Human Services, and my candidate for the job is Howard Dean, as many people.
Mine too.
That I do. I want your comment on that, and I have a rationale behind my decision.
Yeah, no, I was saying this 2-3 days ago on the radio. You know, when Dash was first nominated, in fact, I was saying that I thought he's a good guy. He's a decent Democrat. He was a good legislator. But he's a little too close to health insurance companies. He's not an advocate of single-payer health care. And he's not the kind of expert on our medical systems that Howard Dean is, in as much as Howard Dean, A, is an MD and is married to one, B, has been in private practice, C, was the governor of a state, was an actual administrator of, you know, the equivalent of HHS, a huge department. It's probably as a department as big as the state of Vermont, you know, in terms of the number of dollars that goes through it, or close to it. There's only 600,000 people in Vermont. But he has administered something, he's run something, and as the governor of the state of Vermont, I lived in Vermont when this happened, he put through what was called the Dr. Dinosaur program, which was providing health care basically to all the kids in Vermont who were, you know, below, not just below the poverty level, but below something like, you know, twice the poverty level. And you know, he did a marvelous, marvelous job. He gets it. He understands the issues. And he is a very, very competent political figure as well as a competent administrator. And look at what he did with the DNC. He was brilliant as an administrator. And he never got credit for that the way he should have.
Never got the acknowledgement. And I know there's some tension between the Obama campaign and the DNC when he ran it. But you know, that's maybe indicative of what Obama's doing. He's bringing in the people that he didn't always see eye to eye to in the campaign.
Yeah, if he's willing to bring a Republican
in.
Yeah, exactly. If he's willing to bring a Republican in, he should be willing to bring in Howard Dean.
I'm surprised, Tom, that a lot of the influential people on the radio, on the TV, have not taken up this same line of reasoning that you have. It just is such an obvious thing.
Well, Philip, tag you're it. Pass it along. You know.
Well, you know, we're going to a meeting tonight, 7 o'clock, Dean Democratic Club of Silicon Valley.
We've been
together 6 years, and it's because of Dean we're together and we stay together. And we're making some changes, and frankly, Obama's where he is primarily because of things that people are doing in the community.
Yeah, because of Howard Dean's 50-state strategy. Absolutely. Please give my best regards to your Dean Democrat group tonight.
You got it.
Okay.
Thanks,
Philip. Good talking with you. Kevin in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Kevin. Kevin, you are on the air.
Hi, Tom. Sorry.
That's quite all right. What's up?
I just wanted to make a point and offer a tax cut suggestion.
Okay.
And the first point was that yesterday I heard that Chrysler and now today GM are offering buyouts to their union employees,
mm-hmm.
which I find just to the heinous side of reasonable.
Yeah, well, they've done it before.
Yeah, well, they seem to be doing it again.
Yeah.
And it just seems strange after giving them a big bailout.
It's, and on the other hand, if they don't have the business and they don't have the work for the people, the buyout is at least more humane than just a plain old flat-out firing or layoff.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not privy to the inside details of what's going on here, and it would be interesting to talk to somebody from the UAW or, you know, from you know, out of Detroit who really knows what's going on. In fact, we'll try and track that down. But anyway, your point.
Yeah, and to jump off of that and go to the tax cut proposal,
mm-hmm.
Why not offer the corporate bigwigs, the executives, the board members, and the corporate officers, tax cuts proportional to the difference between the highest compensation of that group, and compensation, not just payment, but total compensation of that group, and their lowest paid employee?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is how it worked for a long time. It still does in the military, I believe, in the civil service. It used to be that there was a 20-to-1 ratio. Most universities around the country had a 20-to-1 ratio. Some even had a 10-to-1 ratio between the lowest paid employee and the most highly paid employee. A lot of this went down the tubes just over the last 15 or 20 years, although Reagan was the one who really started taking it apart in California when he was governor of California. But, yeah, we should go back to something like that. I thought it was a very reasonable and rational policy, and one that should be revisited. It's a healthy thing to say, you know, we're not going to have these, you know, 500 times the pay. I mean, come on, give me a break. Mark in Los Angeles. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Just great.
Well, first let me say, as a lover of democracy, thank you. I have a question for you. You're always talking about the best way to get ourselves out of the economic problems we see is by raising the minimum wage and talking about the living wage. And I'm not quite sure where I stand on it, because I don't quite get all of the big picture of it. Because I think if you raise the minimum wage workers from $5 to $14, then don't the $14 an hour workers then need to make 20 and so on and so forth? And then doesn't something that costs 75 cents made in America then wind up costing $1.50?
Yeah, all of that stuff happens, but the proportions are not what you would expect. When if you look back at the history of increases in the minimum wage going all the way back to the 1930s when the minimum wage was first put into place, every time the minimum wage goes up, broadly, the economy is strengthened. GDP goes up in the immediately following years. And the reason why is because people who are minimum wage workers spend 100% of their income. So it's an economic stimulus. In terms of raising the costs of goods and services, labor is a small part of the cost of most products. Even a relatively labor-intensive product like an automobile, labor accounts for less than 10% of the cost of that car. Labor typically accounts for somewhere between 2 and 8% of the cost of a manufactured good. So if you were to even double the labor cost, the price of the product itself, and you passed along 100% of that in the cost of the product, the cost of the product itself is only going to go up 4 or 5%, so, or 2 or 3%. So what happens is, you know, the question, let me phrase this as an answer to a question. Yes, I would be pleased to pay, you know, 10 cents more for products if I'm making $1.50 more an hour. And Mark, that's the answer. That's how it breaks down. We're going to take a break now, and we'll come back with more of your calls. But that is how it breaks down. Is that as you raise wages, you put more disposable income into the pockets of people who actually spend it, rather than the people who drive bubble economies, the very wealthy, which is what you get when you cut taxes on the rich. The Republicans are advocating, let's go back to another bubble economy. The Democrats are saying, let's build a strong economy like we had in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should, too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
He's an outsider.
This is the demise of a civilization.
With an insider's perspective.
Demise of civilization? What are we talking about here?
Ron Reagan, evenings 6 to 8.
Well, no wonder Bernie Marcos is so upset. Affording people the chance to unionize so that they could get better wages and benefits would be the death of America.
Ron Reagan, right after Randy Rhodes.
You've got to wonder about these titans of capitalism. You got to wonder what's going on in their head.
AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Wouldn't you love to be a lucky parent who's proud of their child's grades? Well, now you can turn poor grades around to A's, even when they're failing. Call right now for a free copy of the Top 10 Secrets to Improving Grades. Call 1-888-502-4917.
Hello, I'm Dan Bassmajan. During my 20 years as an educator, the kids with failing grades were sent to me. I discovered that bad grades don't come from bad or lazy kids. They come from kids who are overwhelmed by everything they have to learn. That's why I created The Simple Way to an A. This system shows kids how to learn and how to ace every test. It's so easy. Your teenager will earn better grades in 30 days guaranteed and become the happy, confident kid you know they can be.
For a limited time, Dan is offering all parents a free copy of his Top 10 Secrets to Improving Grades. Call now so we can send them to you absolutely free. Call 888-502-4917. That's 888-502-4917. Once again, that's 888-502-4917.
I've had this bad cough for the last 2 months. I need to go to the doctor, but I don't have health insurance. I wish I'd looked into it earlier.
If you need help finding affordable health care coverage for yourself, your kids, or your parents, call the Sheba Helpline. We make choosing health care coverage easier. Call us for fast, free service. 1-800-562-6900. Sheba, a free service of Washington's Office of the Insurance Commissioner. 1-800-562-6900.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. Thanks to KPOJ listeners, last month, Eyes on Broadway collected dozens of pairs of eyeglasses that will be distributed in March when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru to perform eye exams. If it's been more than a year since you've had your eyes checked, call Eyes on Broadway today at 503-284-2300 to schedule an appointment. Eyes on Broadway is a proud supporter of Progressive Radio, which is just one reason why I've been a loyal patient for 8 years. Call 284-2300 or visit eyesonbroadway.com.
Join the country's top scholars and authors for Oregon's most prestigious lecture series, the Oregon Historical Society's Mark O. Hatfield Distinguished Historians Forum. The 2009 Sesquicentennial Series begins February 18th with Doris Kearns Goodwin lecturing on Abraham Lincoln. Ms. Goodwin is a world-renowned historian, commentator, and author of several New York Times bestsellers, including Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. Learn more about Doris Kearns Goodwin and the rest of the speakers at OHS.org. Get your tickets today.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to your radio support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman program. And on the line with us, one of my favorite people in the whole world, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Ellen, I got an enigmatic email from you about David Duke, and Tom Daschle just pulled out.
Right. Well, actually, my friend April Ryan here had me listen to this David Duke I guess he has a radio show on the internet.
Yeah,
and
podcast.
He goes after, European American for choosing an African American to be head of the RNC. It really is one of the more amazing pieces of audio I think I've ever listened to.
Yeah. The guy's pretty much he is an avowed racist, and he's pretty much a Nazi, so it's...
It really is staggering.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It almost, in the shock of sitting here in an Obama White House, it really just...
We actually had David Duke on this show about 2 or 3 years ago, I think it was, and I was astounded by just how upfront he was about it. Usually these guys try to, hide it a little bit when they
right,
go into...
Right, exactly.
He doesn't. He's just right out there that he's a racist and he's a Nazi. And at that point, it was like, I'm not even going to have this guy back on again. this is sad. Anyhow, what's going on in the world?
Well, now, of course, we have the Daschle withdrawal and then a White House staffer withdrawal for non-payment taxes. Her non-payment tax was $900-some. I mean, I got to tell you, but for the grace of God, go I.
Yeah.
Anybody who has any kind of complicated business other than just getting one form from your employer, I think you don't want to run for office. You don't want to do anything because there are so many things that...
There have been probably 5 or 6 times in my life when I have been contacted by the IRS or other tax agencies who said, you didn't file this, you forgot. Well, just last year, I had some 1099 income that I forgot to give to our CPA. And the IRS came back and said, hey, we've got a record that you got some money. And it was a small amount of money from a book deal or something. And, we'd lost the paper, for that, I would be disqualified for public office?
That's right. And I think it's really outrageous. And people say, oh, no, you're just saying this because it's a Democrat. No, I've said it because it's a Republican. Our tax system is insane.
Yeah. Well, it is. It does need some dramatic simplification.
For sure. So anyway, they're saying that that the Obama administration wants to set an example of responsibility, and that was just said at the briefing just moments ago.
Okay.
Steny Hoyer this morning had a pen and pad, and he was asked about the second part of the TARP money and accountability and transparency. He said that Secretary Geithner was trying to get a report on the first TARP funds, and he said there was no reporting mechanism in the initial legislation, and now they're trying to contact the companies that got this money and trying to get them to report on it.
And my guess is the companies are saying, you want what?
That's exactly what's going on. He's also saying that they're really hoping to do somehow between $40 and $100 billion, either through the second TARP or some other mechanism, on mortgages.
We just need to nationalize these damn banks. We need to do the exact same thing Sweden did. It worked quite well for them, thank you very much. And let them crash, buy their stock, keep the employees there, protect the depositors, the stockholders. Hey, you invested in a bad company. Sorry. And then build the banks back up, and when they're functioning properly, just like we did with the SNLs, when they're functioning properly, sell them back out into the free market.
I think that your plan is good, Rob, but maybe with your tax problem, you're not going to get appointed.
You're right. Nobody will take me seriously.
Okay. I asked a question of Steny Hoyer this morning because the Europeans, we do a couple of European stations,
yeah.
And they're out of their minds about a part of the bill that basically said it has to be Buy America, Buy America, Buy America. And Ambassador
right.
Bruton, who is the European Union ambassador, has raised some questions about this, as have the Canadians. And apparently the House bill is a little weaker on this than the Senate part of it, but people are concerned that it's going to look like protectionism and therefore the sort of free trade with some of our more nicer neighbors.
Our friendly allies, yeah. I would just like to be on record as being pro-protectionism, but I know that puts me outside the mainstream. Thanks for the heads up, though, Ellen.
You're welcome.
Good talking with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Dr. Anne Marinette Testa is with us, the psychologist, relationship coach, lecturer, editor of several books, most recently The Bully in Your Relationship, Dr. Testa, drtesta.com. Her website, we spoke with you in, first of all, welcome to the show, doctor.
Hey, good to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Great talking with you again. We met in New York at the conference on violence against women that was sponsored by the cosmetic company. Was it Estee Lauder?
Well, you're close. Liz Claiborne.
Liz Claiborne. Thank you. Thank you. That's right. Liz Claiborne. And I thought it was just a fascinating conversation. I wanted to get you back, particularly in the context of some of the what almost seems like political bullying going on, and there's some media bullying going on. We had talked about bullying in relationships in that context at that time because it was the kind of violence against women. But you've written about bullying in the workplace. I wanted to ask you. I've encountered a few bullies in my life. I told the story a while ago. We had a radio row, and there was this one talk show host who went off after a friend of mine, Ellen Ratner, and started yelling at her. You know, I'll have your job and all this because things weren't working out the way he wanted. He didn't realize she owned the company, but in any case. And then there's you know, stuff like, Bill O'Reilly, for example. This kind of mindset, just listen to this clip.
Shoot him on sight. That's me, President O'Reilly. Curfew in Ramadi, 7 o'clock at night. You're on the street, you're dead. I shoot you right between the eyes. Okay? That's how I run that country, just like Saddam ran it. Saddam didn't have explosions. He didn't have bombers, did he?
So there's a mentality there that is, and O'Reilly is famous for intimidating his staff, and I don't want to just personalize this to him, but you know, here's an example that I think everybody's familiar with. How do we deal, and now it seems, you know, over and over and over again, it seems like Harry Reid keeps rolling over for Republican bullies. How do we best deal with bullies in the workplace? How do we deal with bullies in the political arena?
Well, you know, it's no different, actually, than if you deal with it in a relationship. The only thing is a lot of people are afraid of their jobs. But, of course, in a marriage or a relationship, people think that, you know, they might get left behind in the dust in some form or another. So there's fear underneath it all, Tom. You know, that's why, actually, bullies are allowed to live in many ways, because people are afraid that if they step up to the plate and say something to them, that they're going to be rejected. So, you know, bullies are everywhere. Yes, they're in politics, they're in the front page, every moment of our waking hours. And if they're allowed to keep their bullying up, then they become worse. And the thing is that a lot of people are in denial because of their own fears, Tom. That's really what gives a bully a life. And if someone understands the strategies for dealing with a bully, staring them down, and absolutely making it clear that they just can't talk that way to them, then the bully kind of steps backwards and is afraid themselves. Because you know what? A bully really is a scared little person inside.
Yeah, and in fact, I remember in my own childhood, there was a bully in our neighborhood who just scared the bejesus out of me and beat me up more than once. And later in our teenage years, I learned that this was a kid whose dad used to tie him to a pole in the basement, whip him with a belt. He was just, you know, he was a scared kid. I mean, it's I still don't remember him fondly, but you kind of get it. You know, I want to qualify this. I don't know your politics, and your books are not political, but I'd like to put this in a political frame. Do you object to that conversation?
Not at all, not at all, because I wrote a book called Glass Houses, and I that's another story.
Okay, well, let me just toss this out, and maybe I'm misreading this, but, you know, the Republicans typically... The way that things get stopped in the United States Senate is by filibuster, is by standing up and just talking continuously. You know, Strom Thurmond was famous for filibustering for, I think, 50 hours once. You know, they brought in pizza. He had a cot to sleep on. They had a, you know, bucket to whiz into. And you know, sometimes they would take shifts. They'd read the Bible out loud, whatever. And that's a real filibuster. And over 70 times in the last legislative session, the Republicans said to Harry Reid, if you try to bring this legislation to the floor, we will filibuster it, which, in my opinion, was a bullying technique. And
yeah,
he never said, okay, go ahead, make my day. Instead, he rolled right over and said, oh, okay, well, I'll withdraw the legislation then. How do we, having this guy, Harry Reid, who is, I think, a good and decent man and a good legislator and a good representative of the state of Nevada,
right,
but apparently is rolling over in the face of bullying, and it's continuing. How do we help him get his constitution? I mean, I've made jokes at his expense. You know, I really don't want to do that anymore. I want to see the Democrats stand up to the Republican bullies, frankly, just to put it right out there bluntly.
Well, I'm absolutely right there with you. As a matter of fact, I ran for state assembly in New York City, and I understand that. And I also understood, by the way, Tom, that you kind of have to make nice to some people in order to get where you want to get to, and that
sure
is not my style.
Yeah.
You know, I think you have to stand up for what you believe in and not feel the fear that you are going to lose out in some way, lose your job. And by the way, when you stand up for yourself, people pay attention to you. I don't mean do it in an angry way, but I mean, if you believe in something strongly enough, then you stand up for it, right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, you weigh both sides, you look at it, you know, the problem with all angles. And then if you believe strongly in it, you just go for it. You know, I remember when I was going for my first job, and I was such a scared little girl, and I walked into the HR department, and I said, I want to work for the president. And she was just bowled over, and she said, well, what? And I became bigger than life. And I think what I'm saying to you is that if you become bigger than life, and feel the fear, but do it anyway because you believe in a cause, that will make the biggest difference of all. That I think, you know, you were bullied as a child, and boy, so was I in the Bronx, 5 years old, bullied and beaten up after school for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's why I wrote this book, because I don't think anybody deserves to be bullied. They don't deserve it. But inside, if people understand, to your point, that really, you know, it's a scared little kid that's inside there, that boy that was being whipped.
Well, and the Republicans are famous for using fear as their primary tool. I mean, it's be afraid, be more afraid.
Do you think it's a Democratic problem, though? I mean, I
think it's a battered wife syndrome here with Harry Reid, or a Stockholm syndrome or something. It's it's not just Harry Reid, by the way. It seems to be, you know, right across the Democratic Party, and I don't want to see Barack Obama go down that road. And it just seems to me like we should be able to do something. So what exactly does somebody say to a bully, and what can we say to our friends in the Democratic Party who we would like to empower to stand up to bullies?
Well, we want everybody to, I mean, it's not kumbaya, but we really want to see both sides of the situation and not allow the bullying to take place, just to nip it in the bud, because it doesn't help our country if we're playing those kinds of games, jockeying for position. I think Obama, I think he's not going to falter, that he's got, you know, good people around him who are going to, you know, go the distance. I really believe that. You know, in other words, if you can't do it all, you choose people that are smart or smarter in certain ways around you. And I don't see, first of all, I don't see him being a victim of anybody. He's worked too hard to get to where he is to allow that to happen. So I don't see that happening with the Democrats. I think that they are enjoining each other. It's not Democrat against Republican. It's about us in our country. It's about a teamwork. And so if there is a bullying and if somebody is afraid of a senator or whatever, someone who seems to be more influential and that your job is at hand, I think you've got to be able to just have the confidence and feel your own competence to stand up and say, listen.
So we should call up Harry Reid's office and say, you know, we've got your back, Harry. Call them out on it. If they're going to threaten a filibuster, have them do it, and we'll show up at the, we'll charter a plane to Washington, D.C., and show up to help you out if necessary or something
like that. You're darn right. You know, sometimes you do have to fight fire with fire, and sometimes, you just can't sit back. You can't sit back. I'm all for standing up for what you believe in.
There you go. So very, very well said. Dr. Ann Renee Testa, Dr. Testa, DRTESTA.com, the website. Dr. Testa, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. It was a pleasure. Look forward to our doing it again.
Me too. Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Is your IRA performing the way you want it to? Are you concerned about the stock market and inflation? Many people have been watching their IRA stock portfolio dwindle in value. It's tough to plan for retirement in today's economy. The answer may be gold. Experts believe that gold and other precious metals are wise investments for your IRA because historically they have been one of the few ways to protect assets from high inflation and economic uncertainty. You can now put gold in your IRA. The very forces that weaken paperback stock investments often cause gold to rise. It's now easier than ever to do and is approved by the federal government. Together, we can help you develop an IRA portfolio that works for you. Call Blanchard & Company Incorporated for a free, no-obligation consultation to learn how. Call 888-IRA-GOLD. 888-IRA-GOLD. That's 888-IRA-G-O-L-D. 888-IRA-GOLD.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KPOJ. 620KPOJ.com.
Love. Maybe it's okay for an airline pillow, but can you imagine using airline fluff to support your entire body? Many furniture makers think a little cotton fluff wrapped around particle board and then covered in vinyl is a good idea, like that furniture sold in grocery stores. Low-priced chairs or sofa that might look appealing but aren't built to last. Within months, a cheap chair will collapse like a house of cards or poke you in the back like a steel bar on a cheap hide-a-bed. In a world of imitators, what you really need is Lazy Boy Furniture. Beautiful chairs and sofas that are well constructed. Each piece comes with a lifetime warranty. And while our furniture might cost more, you'll save money over time because it's built to last. Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries for stylish, quality-built furniture, not fluff. Shop at our six area stores or online at LazyBoyPortland.com. Lazy Boy, your home now. Put your feet up.
Wouldn't you love to be a lucky parent who's proud of your child's grades? Well, now you can turn poor grades around to A's, even when they're failing. Call right now for a free copy of the Top 10 Secrets to Improving Grades. Call 1-888-635-1248.
I'm Dan Bass-Majan. During my 20 years as an educator, the kids with failing grades were sent to me. I discovered that bad grades don't come from bad or lazy kids. They come from kids who are overwhelmed by everything they have to learn. That's why I created The Simple Way to an A. This system shows kids how to learn and how to ace every test. It's so easy, your teenager will earn better grades in 30 days guaranteed and become the happy, confident kid you know they can be.
For a limited time, Dan is offering all parents a free copy of his Top 10 Secrets to Improving Grades. Call now so we can send them to you absolutely free. 888-635-1248. That's 888-635-1248. Call 888-635-1248.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
We need to play this song for Harry. That's what we need to do. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, quick heads up. Tonight in New York City, my co-author, or I'm his co-author, or whatever, Lamar Waldron, who Lamar and I wrote a couple of books, Legacy of Secrecy and Ultimate Sacrifice, two books about the JFK and Martin Luther King assassinations. He's going to be speaking 7 o'clock tonight in Manhattan at McNally Jackson Bookstore, 52 Prince Street. On February 26th and 27th, I'll be in Washington, D.C. for the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, and the CPAC.org is their website. On the 7th of March, it'll be a one-day cruise with Louise and me and some folks from KPTK AM Talk 1090. That's from noon to 3 aboard the Royal Argosy, and the tickets are available on their website at am1090seattle.com for those of you in Seattle. In Chicago, March 19th, I'll be there that Thursday. I'll be there Friday as well, but doing my show from the station. But on Thursday, I'll be debating Michael Medved. This is a debate sponsored by Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. And their website, if you want tickets to that in Chicago, is chicagoprogressivetalk.com. And on Saturday, May 2nd, in Denver, Colorado, I am one of the keynote speakers to the Green Festival there. And their website is greenfestivals.org/Denver. So a lot going on. Louise reminded me during the break of a story from one of our kids when our kids were at this time was probably around 10, 11 years old. And it's not a bullying story, but it's a matching and pacing. These are two terms I devoted a chapter to in Cracking the Code, this neurolinguistic programming concept, NLP concept of matching and pacing the intensity of the other person. And I was laying in the bed with a computer on my lap, and one of our kids came in and said, I want $5. And I said, it's not your allowance time yet, and maybe we can negotiate something if there's work that needs to be done or whatever, but no, I'm not going to give you the $5. And this kid starts basically yelling, I want the $5 and I want it now. And so I jumped up off the bed and yelled right back, exactly, not louder, not trying to shout down, but to be mirroring the intensity, saying, no, I'm going to keep it in my pocket. You're not gonna. And then as I continued that sentence, then I amped it down a little bit. And I think maybe we can work this out. Now let's and then our child amped it down, and it's like this stepping into that space with the other person. And we just, we need more Democrats to understand this stuff, I guess. 866-303-2270. Al in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Al, what's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing?
Great.
I happen to be watching you also.
Oh, well, hey, Al. I just waved at you. It'll probably take a second. I think there's a delay or so on the video. But what's up?
Yeah, I know that. Listen, here's what I have to say about the Republicans, and I think we all have to start doing this. We have to change the Republicans' name from Republicans to the Obstructionist Party and keep calling them the Obstructionist Party, because that's exactly what they are. It's giving back to the bully what they're giving to you,
along with
what you say.
Or call them the Obstructionist. Go ahead.
And we also have to remind them we are the majority party and you are the minority party, and treat them like the minority party instead of keeping backing down and backing and filling. And the other thing that I think about,
Al, before you get to that, if I could just put a point on that, rather than I would much rather see the Democrats, instead of saying, you know, we're the majority party, therefore we have the power, therefore you're going to have to go along, you know, I would much rather have the Democrats say, we have principles that we truly believe in. This is the right thing for the country. We're not going to back down from the principle. Because that's something that the Democrats can and should continue to say, even when they're the minority party. And that day will come, too. You know, these things do go in cycles, as much as we may think it's isn't it great right now.
I agree with you. But I think, really, if on the air, everybody starts calling them the obstructionist party, it, you know, if you, the more you say it, the more it becomes true. And it's interesting that you were talking about what you did with your son. I mean, you give them back exactly what they're giving to you, which what the Democrats have not done, okay? The other thing is, you know, I'm thinking about what Obama's doing and how nice he's being to the Republican Party, and I think what he's doing, quite honestly, I mean, if it were me, I think he's giving them enough rope to hang themselves.
I suspect you're right, Al, and I hope you're right, because it seems that, you know, increasingly across America, Americans are getting it, that the Republicans are the obstructionist party, the obstructionist Republicans. And, you know, he put out the hand, he went to meet them. He even invited Kyle and McCain to come over to the White House and watch the Super Bowl with him, you know, and they said, no, thanks. I mean, he had...
Here's what I think. You know, it's the old story, you keep your enemies close and your, you keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Right.
I think he's giving them enough rope to be able to, a month down the road, say, you know what? I've tried to work with you every single which way. I have done everything. I've bent over backwards for you. And you know what? At this point, we don't need you.
Right.
Goodbye.
And the problem that the Republicans are going to have is that while they are claiming to be holding to principle, they're really all over the map. They don't have clear and identifiable principles. They say that they have these conservative principles, like we don't want to borrow money, but then they want tax cuts, which is borrowing money to give, you know, to reduce taxes. So it doesn't make any sense. They're still trying to play Jude Winiski's two Santa Claus theory out. It worked for Reagan. It worked for Bush, at least the first Bush. It ain't working anymore.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer?
Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour, the place where despair is not an option. Get out there, get active, my friends. Well, this guy in Marseille, France, 21 years old, he was trying to break into a bank and drilled a hole through the wall of an adjoining building above the suspended ceiling, and then through the ceiling drilled a hole or knocked out the ceiling below him and fell down through that ceiling into what he thought was the bank vault. Turned out it was the toilet. In fact, when the police came, they had to get him unstuck from the toilet, which reminds me of the sage advice given on this program to our listeners in all of America by Joe the Plumber. What's the best thing to do when your drains are running slow or clogged up?
Well, what I find the best thing to do is to flush your pipes out. You know, I always tell my customers at least once a week in the kitchen. Usually that's where, you know, if you have a garbage disposal or that, you fill up both basins or the single basin. And with cold water, hot water really doesn't make the difference. And flush your pipes at least once a week, help that keep it going strong, because the food settles in the pipe and then it'll start creating blockages. So flushing the pipes out helps out tremendously.
There you go. And you don't want burglars clogging up your pipes in your bank. So be sure and keep those flushed out, too. 866-303-2270, Jerry in Indiana. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Hello, Mr. Hartman. How are you this afternoon, sir?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
The reason I called you is that I'm bewildered. You know, we talked last week about the lawsuit I filed against the federal government to try to get some answers about where our money has went with the TARP. And,
oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, and I tried to get out the message, and I called Mr. Rush Limbaugh's show, and I called Mr. Hannity's show, and I was amazed because when I called Mr. Limbaugh's show, his screener went to the point where he called me un-American.
Un-American? We're trying to find out where our TARP money went?
He went to the point to say I was un-American, and I said, wait a minute. You mean after working at Ground Zero, after being in Katrina and Biloxi, and after working in Lake Charles, never asking for a dime, and you call me un-American for what I'm doing? And I thought maybe it was just an off day. So I called Mr. Hannity's show and tried to get on there to try to talk about this.
Right.
And what they asked me there is, are you an angry liberal?
And pardon my laughter. I'm sorry.
I can't imagine.
I'm just thinking of Shelley in New York, you know, the woman who answered the phone when you called, our call screener. And I can just, you know, I'm thinking Shelley saying to somebody, are you an angry conservative? I just can't imagine it, you know? It's like,
I was totally taken back. You know, for the longest time, I guess you could say, just because of being in the military and the things that I've done, that I would maybe be aligned with that. I've always voted my opinion, but I thought maybe, you know, because these are the folks that lift the banner. They're about family. They're about small government. They're about everybody's rights. But when somebody actually goes and files a suit and says, hey, stop, don't spend any more money in my name. Don't do anything in my name unless you can tell me where it went and who got my money.
Right.
And
how I'm going to get it back someday.
Well, we're
like to add to it.
It's going to be on the back of my children, my grandchildren, their children, because nobody knows where the rabbit hole is going to end. But I, you know, after that, I was taken back because I guess I'm at a loss. If you listen to the Fox News and everybody, and I do watch them, I watch CNN, but you know, Air America and everybody, you guys are the left wing. You're the radicals. You shouldn't be listening to me and what I'm doing.
What we are, Jerry, Air America and Progressive Talk Radio in general, is we are representing actually the point of view of well over 60, 70, 80% of Americans on most issues. And I think it's so sad that we're characterized as being somehow the hard left. What has happened is that the crackpot right, the Limbaugh Hannity crackpot right, has been defined as if it was the normal right, as if it was the old Barry Goldwater, Nelson Rockefeller, whatever right. When in fact they're not. They're way beyond that. And it's caused a real problem, frankly, for the Republican Party because ever since the days of Newt Gingrich and the great purges in the House of Representatives, they're left with nothing but these kind of crazies, basically. You know, the there's a couple of decent Republicans, you know, Olympia Snow, George Voinovich, Susan Collins, but they're few and far between.
Well, sir, like I said, I just don't understand. I've been
so Jerry, for your lawsuit, do you have a website? Anything?
Yes,
that, okay, you want to give it a plug here.
I have the PDF. It's on my website. It is www.mailnursemagazine, all one word, mailnursemagazine.com. There's nothing bad there. It's a website I developed 5 years ago to try to get more people into nursing.
Yep.
There you'll find on the media page, you can find links to the YouTube stuff and everything. And I've been doing a lot of blogging and stuff like that, but it is there. And if people wish to contact me, it is Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y, RN at dishmail.net. And last time we talked, your listeners have been great. They have been very supportive. People have asked for copies of it, and I've given copies. But know this, sir, at no time is this about me. It's about the American people. It's about finding out where our money went, and maybe I'll get blown.
Jerry?
Maybe I'll lose a lot in the process because I've already been told by the courts. I've been set back. I've got to pay the filing fee, and they warned me that I may even have to pay the government's attorney.
Jerry, I think you've got a call coming in, and I've got to move along to other callers. But mailnursemagazine.com and Jerry RN at
Dishmail, DISHMAIL.net.
Okay, great. Jerry, thanks a lot, and good luck. Good luck.
Thank
Keep
you,
us
sir.
Up to date. Good to hear from you. Bernice in Dearborn. Hey, Bernice, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. We the people who want to see Howard Dean replace Tom Daschle as the nominee.
Amen. There's a thread about this over at democraticunderground.com, by the way. One of the top threads over at democraticunderground.com right now is, you know, let's get Howard Dean out there, you know, in place of Daschle. I'm sorry, I interrupted you in mid-sentence, Bernice. You were saying.
Oh, I was wondering how we need to express ourselves as quickly and directly as possible to the president.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been calling the White House comments line, and I was wondering what you suggest.
I think the White House comments line is a good one. Obama put together a website for people to participate in government, and I confess I have at the moment forgotten what the URL for it is.
I can get that.
Yeah, Sean is trying to track it down. We'll have it on the air within a minute or three. But the other thing is that the Democratic Party, you know, people talk to each other inside the party. And if you contact your Democratic representatives, I don't think it's going to do any good to contact a Republican representative. But if you have a Democratic member of the House of Representatives, and if you have Democratic senators,
right.
And you're in Washington. No, you're in Michigan, aren't you?
Right.
You have two Democratic senators, and I don't know if your individual House member is a Democrat. I would call their offices.
Conyers.
Oh, you got Conyers? Call all three of them and just say, hey, would you please pass the word along to Barack Obama that he should consider Howard Dean for that job?
Okay.
And because they have the ability to do that, they have, you know, that they're sort of the first among equals within the party. So, Bernice, good luck, and thank you for raising that. I appreciate the call. Dennis in Homestead, Florida, listening on WINS. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
excuse me. I wanted to call about the medical records being online.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of us who are online and have our medical records online. Everybody who's in the VA.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big system. I've had all my medical records computerized since I came on the VA in 2001.
Right, but is the VA system is a proprietary, not on the internet system? Is it not? I thought it was a separate, you know, sort of like the NSA system.
I am not 100% sure on this, but I have been told if I'm any place in the country and I have to go to a VA hospital, they can access my records.
Right, sure, but I believe that that's the case. But that does, well, it may mean that it's on the internet. It may also mean that it's on a proprietary system that's only available to the VA.
Oh, it probably is on a secured system. Yes.
Yeah.
I would assume that anybody who's going to have any kind of medical records is going to have a secured system.
Yeah. So in other words, your opinion is that it's worked well for you and that it's already out there. Am I paraphrasing your positioning right?
Well, my opinion is quite frankly, it's cheaper, it's more accurate. Anything that I need, for example, about a week and a half ago, I had a minor little skin cancer surgery thing. They needed to check and see if I had a particular kind of ointment. And I said, I don't know. Hey, look, boom, yes, you have it at home. It's that simple. I mean, you don't have to keep.
They didn't say, yes, you have it at home. It's on the left-hand corner of your dresser.
No, it's not quite that way. They don't get into that.
Oh, that was during the Bush administration they did that. That's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Hey, anyway, no, it works. And I see no reason why people should panic. I mean, if you're worried about this and you're a patient and a doctor's, you know, that goes to a particular doctor,
sure.
Say, especially in our town, which is reasonably small, if somebody wants to break in, there's all, you know, there are all these paper files sitting there.
Yeah,
granted,
yeah. They're still accessible. Now, your point is well made, Dennis. Thank you very much for the call. That's, again, this takes me back to the point that I think we made with when I was talking with Paula, who was listening in Carbondale, is that we need to have a national conversation about this and about how to go forward with it. And I think one of the best people to lead that conversation is Dr. Howard Dean. I really and truly do. Oh, and by the way, whitehouse.gov. Check it out to feedback to Obama.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Tom Hartman here. Hey, guys, do you know the symptoms of an enlarged prostate? Like it or not, you probably will, because eventually it's going to happen to most of us as we get older. If you're urinating more frequently, especially if you're waking up two, maybe three times a night to go to the bathroom, that's the first sign. Second sign might be burning, pain, or even problems in the bedroom. This is not just an old man's concern. It happens to American men more often than in other countries and can occur as young as 30. So don't ignore the symptoms. Get checkups from your doctor and order your risk-free bottle of Beta Prostate to support healthy prostate functioning. Every man should take Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate will help keep your prostate healthy, and it's a natural alternative. You don't need a prescription for it. Call now and order Beta Prostate risk-free. Dial 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Don't put this call off till tomorrow. Call today, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Carl Wolfson and friends.
Let's get to Joe the plumber. He's covering the war in Israel.
6 to 9.
You're not going
to
believe what he said.
I'll be honest with you, I don't think journalists should be anywhere allowed war. And if you're going to sit there and say, well, look at this atrocity, well, you don't know the full story behind it half the time.
Yeah, you know, we should just take what the Pentagon says. No atrocities. You know, that's just war.
It's Carl Wolfson.
I think he's one of those people that had his 5 minutes of fame and now thinks he's really smart.
I kind of lean that he's an idiot.
Morning, 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
I'm Tom Dwyer. I usually give you our number, 230-2300, and now I'm giving you another important number, 350. Why 350? We know too much carbon dioxide contributes to global climate change, and now we know how much is too much. The best science tells us that 350 parts per million carbon dioxide is the red line for humans on Earth. The higher over 350 we go, the less likely it is that we'll ever bring climate change under control. Right now, we're at 387. You can do something. Go to TomDwyer.com and click the link to 350.org and learn about the global movement to bring us back down below 350. Then join our carbon neutral program and offset your carbon emissions now. Sign up using the promo code KPOJ, save 50% on membership, your car will be carbon neutral, and we'll give you $350 worth of discounts. Now that's a great way to help your car, your wallet, and your planet. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, keeping your vehicle safe, breakdown free, and operating at their best. 503-230-2300. And now, more importantly, 350.
If your credit card debt is out of control, if you're in over your head dealing with monthly payments, there's a powerful secret that credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe, cutting your payments by up to half or more. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt and lower your payments by up to half or more. It's yours free by calling 1-800-400-6475. Don't declare bankruptcy. Give us 10 minutes and we could save you thousands. Live better, debt-free. Find out how easy it is by calling for this valuable free information. For the secret that credit card companies don't want you to know, call 1-800-400-6475. That's 1-800-400-6475. 1-800-400-6475.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. Who says there's no such thing as a free lunch? This month at Floor Trends Northwest in Sellwood, when you schedule your complimentary flooring estimate, you also get a gift certificate good for lunch at either Hawthorne Fish House Southeast or Corbett Fish House Southwest. Now's the time to start planning for your spring home improvement projects. Schedule your complimentary flooring estimate, tile, hardwood, or carpet, by calling 503-236-8775 or visit floortrendsnw.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Exposing the con and conservative, Tom Hartman here with you. TomHartman.com for our live free chat room, AirAmerica.com for our free video stream, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Gary in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was wanting to talk to you a little bit about the guy you interviewed in the second hour.
Dan Gainer?
Go ahead.
Dan Gaynor, the Business and Media Institute?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you were asking him how much socialism should we have in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to expand the political canvas a little bit and say that I don't find the definitions of socialism very accurately reflected in, you know, in American opinion. And on your show, perhaps that's true. In my opinion, socialism is public ownership of the means of production and democratic control. And the democratic control is absolutely central to the whole thing.
Right, which didn't happen in the Soviet Union.
Exactly.
But see, you're still using a Marxist, and in fact, you know, the Soviet Union didn't play out Marxism really; they played out Stalinism.
Right.
But the point is that I'm not sure that even the means of production. In fact, I'll say explicitly, I don't think that the means of production and distribution should be in the hands of government. I think it should be regulated by we the people, government. But I don't think it should be in the hands of the government. I do think, however, that there is a bright line that we can define where we want to be socialist and where we don't want to be socialist. And that bright line is the commons. Anything that has to do with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, those things that are literally essential to life or to a functioning economy, the banking system, our healthcare system, these are our water, our electricity, our utilities, our roads, our air traffic system. These are the things that we all collectively, our rail system, these are the things that we all collectively own and should administer for our collective public good. The systems by which we determine and maintain the safety of products in the marketplace, including food and drugs, all of those things are things that I think rightly should be socialized. That is, they should be either owned or heavily regulated by the government. On the other hand, my experience around the world in those countries, some of which are not even communist, they're just, you know, petty tin pot dictatorships. What I saw when I was in Uganda in the 80s, for example, where the government was brewing the beer, you know, they owned the beer company. And the beer smelled so much of chlorine, it was hard to drink. And it said, you know, with approved additives in the big letters across the top. You know, I really don't want government doing some of those things. I would rather have them protecting the commons, because that's the appropriate role of government in my mind, and in the mind, I believe, of Jefferson and Thomas Paine and some of the other founders.
But if we own the government, then I don't think we have to fear the government. The government we fear usually when it's not under our control. But I say, you know, why shouldn't everything be done for the public good?
Because it won't happen. No. It won't happen because absolute power corrupts absolutely. Because
that's an argument against, you know, the private concentration of wealth.
Right, and it's against the concentration of wealth anywhere, including in a government. And
yes,
so
right.
If the government controls the means of production and distribution, you will end up with a Stalinist state. I think that's the great experiment of the USSR was that and the ongoing great experiment of the kibbutz in Israel, which are communists, is that communism works. That is where everybody, you know, collectively owns everything and everybody works for the public good and, you know, from each according to his abilities and to each according to his needs. That works when you have fewer than 150 or 200 people, when everybody knows everybody, when there's collective and ongoing accountability and social pressure. When it starts to break down is when you get beyond a couple hundred people, and which is why historically, if you look at Aboriginal indigenous people all over the world, tribes always break into clans at around 150 people. Malcolm Gladwell wrote about this in The Tipping Point. I can't remember the name of the scientist that he was quoting in that book, but there's a guy, a British scientist, who did some really fascinating research on this.
Diamond.
Yeah, and Jared Diamond has written about it too. What they found was that among mammals, the number of members of a social group was in linear proportion to the size of their brain. So we have a 1600cc brain on average, and we can on average functionally know and interact with about 150 people. You go to an animal that's got an 800cc brain, and they will functionally know and interact with around 75 other animals. And the smaller the brains got, the smaller the clans or tribes got, as it were. And I think that as long as you stay within that tribe model, then communism works, because it is the way that most Aboriginal and Indigenous people administer their governments. But when you turn into a nation state, it ceases to work. And then you have to come up with something else. And that something else, I think, is capitalism for the things that are discretionary, for the I wants, and socialism for the I must have to, in order to survive. I want my power company to be answerable to me, not to stockholders or to T. Boone Pickens. I want my water supply to be answerable to me. I want my medicine to be answerable to me. I want my roads to be answerable to me, and my police and fire. But I would much rather have 10 different companies all vying for my business manufacturing computers.
Well,
makes sense?
I'd absolutely like to see government broken down to a human scale.
Yeah, and Jefferson, it's interesting. Jefferson, if you go back and you read his diaries, and Gary, thanks for the call in. I love this topic. You go back and you read Jefferson's diaries and his letters, and he had this long screed. I put it in one of my books, and the editor took it out because I just loved it so much, but it was way too long. He had this long screed about how the salvation of the American form of government would be the wards. In other words, breaking down, giving the greatest amount of power to the smallest and most local form of government. I thought it was just a great suggestion. Anyhow, coming up tomorrow, Bernard Goldberg is going to come by and tell us why he thinks the press is in love with Barack Obama. That should be entertaining. Dr. Cass Ingram is going to tell us what goes on really inside the FDA. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. It all starts with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow. Have a great one.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.